Richard, have we pushed record?
Yeah, we're going, I think.
Oh, we are going. Oh, this,
are we?
This is a big one. And this is where he drops in the intro. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today at the BrandoCast with a gentleman. Well, there's a special guest who's lurking around in the background, Mr. Ahmed Zappa, who's responsible for this recording situation.
Don't mind me.
My guest today, when I thought I wanted to do my own thing, you, Mr. Posehn, were the first person that came into my brain because I built this podcast for you.
Thanks, buddy.
I truly built this podcast for you. Ladies and gentlemen, one of my favorite comics of all times, an actor. He's barked on Big Bang Theory. You know him from Mr. Show. You know him from so many other things, but most importantly, he's a heavy metal ambassador.
Yes.
He's a heavy metal ambassador. He carries the torch for the rest of us metal nerds, pushing metal to the masses, Mr. Brian Posehn.
Hey.
We're also here with super producer Richard Sheltinga. Say hi, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hello.
And as I said before, Ahmed Zappa is lurking around in the background. Full disclosure, we just recorded Ahmed's show, Rock Tales, which is our new show that's on Sirius. What channel is it on?
It's on Volume 106, Sirius XM.
Volume 106, whatever.
Yeah, because you seem a little saucy, too, by the way.
Oh, because
we full on.
Like 30 shots in? What do you
Ahmed, and Richard bought a ton of very nice booze from a fancy place in the Larchmont Village. And I'm a wreck. I'm going to get sober tomorrow. I'm going to go to AA. In fact, I know the meeting I'm going to go to.
I have a whole
Moore Park and cold water.
I have a whole.
That would be a good one, I bet.
I have a whole day of work. And I've had way too much drink.
I have a date tomorrow. I'm going out to Malibu with a lady. And I might be hungover tomorrow.
A day date.
Malibu Beach.
Wait a second.
Get that steak.
You have a. Is this real?
Yeah.
Is this science fiction? Like Lars in the Real World?
No. Was it always Malibu? He just was talking about Malibu. I think you're like,
Brian, I need to go to the sea once a week.
Okay.
You need to know this about me. It's not me. Your friend Brandon needs to go to the sea one day a week.
All right.
Anyway. So I have a day date tomorrow, but I'm so excited. I'm so excited to do the BrandoCast here today with Mr. Brian Posehn. Now, Brian, you have a new record out that the world needs. What is it called?
It's called Grandpa Metal.
Grandpa
Metal.
The band
is called just Posehn. It's not my full name, just my last name. And
did you work on the font?
Yeah, we did a Metallica font.
Fuck yeah.
Because we tried original fonts. Things that no one's ever seen before. And you can't really beat the Metallica font.
No, you can't.
We'll see if they take me to court. I don't think they will. Because we're on Megaforce, which is where they started. So there's some history there and they're pals.
Shit.
Yeah, so.
Oh, is there an umlaut?
Yeah.
No. But there's no umlaut in the Metallica.
You
think you should have added one? No, but Posehn, where would you put the umlaut? Over the H?
Over the O.
Every letter?
Yeah, over the O and over the E. Right. But it is the Metallica font.
Yes.
Okay, that's kind of amazing. Isn't the Metallica font available on Apple? Like when you log into your computer, can't you use that?
Yeah, I feel like it.
Because the Scorpions font, I remember when the Scorpions font was taken from like Rollerball. The movie Rollerball
exactly.
used the Scorpions font.
Yeah, I remember that.
Scorpions used the Rollerball font.
I don't know.
Wait, I literally just sent the sentence, Scorpions used the Rollerball font.
It's all right to be sloppy.
Okay. Anyway, so the album is out. Do we have anything that
But by the time this airs, is that what you're trying to say? Is by the time this airs, it will be out?
I don't know what I'm trying to say.
All right.
I don't know where I'm at.
Comes out the 14th of February.
Patton, it's so good to see you.
God damn it.
You're really good on AP Bio, brother.
This is going to be long.
Yeah.
Thanks. #SaveAPBio.com.
No. So the album, when is the album coming out?
February 14th.
Okay, February 14th. But there is stuff available
on... Yes, you can already get our cover of Take On Me, and then our second single comes out next week of Grandpa Metal, and then we're doing two videos... And then we'll see. I'm not.
Is there a Take On Me video that's been finished?
No, we're not doing that. But we did a video. We're doing a video for Grandpa Metal, and we're doing another song called "New Music Sucks."
Because it does. Because it does.
It's a thing that I've thought before.
Yeah.
And so I decided to make a song.
Who's in the band?
Our regular players, it's Scotty Ian and myself and Brendan Small, and we write most of the music together, and then Joe Troman from Fall Out Boy and a bunch of other bands, hilarious dude, he helped me write a couple of songs together, and then and plays on the record, and then Joey Vera from Armored Saint and Anthrax.
Right. Not Billy Vera.
No.
And the Beaters.
Thank God you said the Beaters, because I was like, who the fuck is that? But I remember the Beaters. And that makes you remember. I bet you Billy Vera would be mad that I would remember the Beaters first. Who fronted the Beaters? Remember the Beaters? They were so great.
Me! I'm fucking Billy Vera! God damn it!
And then the cover of Take On Me.
Now the cover of, we have a little, can we do a little,
yeah,
a little taste of that?
Yeah. It's all metal and shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Take On Me cover. And singing lead vocals on this is?
That's Jill Janis from Huntress.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And then the gang vocals are, it's me, Scott, and then Chuck Billy from Testament, and Zetro from Exodus. Bay Area metal legends.
It's like, quite wonderful, Amit. What do you think about that?
I see the video. You in Rotoscope?
Brian, it would be pretty amazing.
Would be awesome.
No, I want somebody to do it. We just didn't because, have the...
Like, your version, like if you were doing a remake of the music video, like you've done a remake of this song, yeah. I see you riding a dragon into battle. You know, I...
Absolutely.
But in all seriousness... It's your vocals sound great. The production sounds great. I don't think that, I don't know if you were intending this to kind of be funny that you're doing it, but it's just rad.
Yeah, no, rad. I didn't want this one to be funny. I just wanted this one to kick ass.
Because you love the song, right?
I actually do.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a pretty great song. But I also feel like this. I feel like any good song would be better if it's metal.
Yes.
Like, and, yeah.
Give me
like
another. Give me another. I agree with anything. You, but give me another example.
Black on gold dust woman.
Yeah.
Rabbits on the feet of Peter Jam.
He just threw
out. I was going to say Vacation by the Go-Go's.
Vacation, oh. All I ever wanted.
I thought you would do the vacation theme.
I'm all ready.
Yes.
Well, nobody worry about me.
No, that's Caddyshack.
Oh, that fuck! What?
Yeah. That's Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, Kenny Loggins. What's happening? What's the
Holiday Road?
Holiday Road.
Yes. Yeah, see.
Holiday Road.
Yeah. Can you promise me
we can stop the fire?
No, I would absolutely do Holiday Road next.
Can we do it like an Evanescence cover? And I'd like to be Evan.
Like that style.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do that. Little Linkin Park. A
yeah,
little,
you'll be yeah, like the yeah, rapper, like yeah. That guy.
Yeah, yeah. Or what was the guy from that terrible band that?
That literally is every shitty band out there. I have so many answers for you. For like, what was the guy?
I just thought Maroon 5.
No,
that was
no,
the first
no,
thing that came to my head. Maroon 5.
Disturbed, the monkey guy. That
wow. Wow. Wait, you don't actually like Disturbed?
Not so much.
The Sound of Silence.
Aye, 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 aye. What's
the you fucking get up. You get down with the sickness.
Yeah, that I don't love that.
All right, good.
That was good. Off the rails. Off the rails already. All right. Here's the thing. The Brandocast. Let's bring it back to the Brandocast. Right. I hate to be a buzzkill. I hate to stomp on everyone's buzz because we do have a nice buzz going on. Mm-hmm. But, Brian, what I usually do with people, as you know, that I read them, I bring them my guests in, and I read them the history of a band they might not know or they might not like. And then we just sort of see where the conversation goes. But today I have chosen a band that you and I share in common. It's one of the reasons that I love you so much, because I feel like you and I are out in the world saying to people, anyone who will listen, this is the most important band in the history of bands. There is the Beatles, and then there's this.
Yeah. Where'd you see them first? You saw them in
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Ladies and gentlemen, today on the BrandoCast, we are breaking down Iron Maiden. Iron Maiden are an English heavy metal band formed in East London back in 1975 by bassist and primary songwriter Steve Harris. Pioneers of the new wave of British heavy metal, Maiden achieved initial success during the early 80s. After a few lineup changes, the band went on to release a series of gold and platinum albums. To date, Iron Maiden has sold over 100 million albums worldwide, and they are consistently ranked as one of the top touring bands in the music business today. Despite little radio or television support, Maiden is considered one of the most successful bands in heavy metal history. The current lineup, the most important lineup, Steve Harris on bass, Nico McBrain on drums, Adrian Smith, Dave Murray, and Yannick Gehrs on guitar, and the legendary Bruce Dickinson on lead vocals. We're going to talk about Iron Maiden today. We're just going to use Iron Maiden as the backbone of our conversation.
I like them. I think they're pretty good. They made a couple of good songs.
I'm sorry to interject, but yes. Can we just address the guitar player in the room?
Who? Do it.
Yannick? Can we just talk about it?
I'm going to say, I love Yannick.
He's a great guitar player.
Yeah.
Are you saying you have a problem with his stage moves? You don't like his persona?
I didn't say that. I was inferring that.
By the way that you threw out that question on the table,
I've come, you threw
a dead cat onto the table, and I realized there's a dead cat in the middle of the table.
I've come around on Yannick.
Okay, love him? That's why I want to hear this.
I love him.
Okay, great.
Used to enjoy his jackassery, because one of the things I love about Maiden is, sure, they put on a big show, but they're also kind of serious. Yep. You know, they just play their asses off. But Yannick is like, he's got that shit. Like, he's got a little,
he's a dancer.
He's got a little Juan Crozier.
He's a dancer.
He's fancy.
A little Juan Crozier from Rat. And he's also got a little Rudy Sarzo.
Yeah.
He's just got...
He's theatrical.
He's posy.
He's big.
And I love Rudy Sarzo and I love Juan Crozier, but because they both play bass, they have more time to dick around. So they both do that.
Let me just say this.
I feel like Yannick, because he plays third guitar in a band with two guitars where they really don't need a third guitar. Like, those are two of the best guitar players in the world. So to be Yannick, like, you kind of don't need to be there anyway.
Right. So I will say this to the people listening.
You might as well run around and do stretches.
And spins.
And spins.
And throw the guitar over your shoulder.
My wife went with me the last time. She'd seen them before with me years ago. And she went this last time we took our kid. And he was the big takeaway for her.
Yeah.
He was the part where she came away and she was like, that guy's fucking awesome. Like, what's that guy's deal? And I was like, okay, I'll tell you that guy's deal. That guy came in, had a job for a little while. Then the original guy came back and they were like, man, let's keep Yannick. And no fans wanted them to. No one was like, please keep Yannick. But they did, because they're cool guys. And that's what he does. He just flies around the world. Stretching.
Let me just say to the people listening at home, and my Aunt Jean, who does listen to the podcast, all three of you out there, that Yannick Gehrs is the most theatrical, besides Bruce Dickinson, in Maiden. He spins, he runs, he dances, he spins, he twirls, he does a whole thing while he plays guitar. I fucking love Yannick, because usually I try to get in front of Yannick. Not because he's my favorite, because I love that view of Maiden from his side of the stage. And I've just come to... I fucking love him. He's a great guitar player.
He is a great guitar.
And he adds a great tone to Iron Maiden. Now, quick tangent. You were mentioning when your wife saw Iron Maiden, we were at the same show in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
And we had texted each other beforehand, because you went to Portland because...
just for them.
Right. Because you knew you couldn't go to see them in L.A.
Yeah, I was going to be on
this
the
last tour, on the Legacy of the Beast tour.
And I just didn't want to miss it. I'd already seen the set list.
Right.
And I dorked out over it because the last tour they did was so new album heavy. And I love Maiden, but...
The Book of Souls tour.
You don't go to see the Book of Souls tour
if you're not
hoping that you want... Right. You know, no one was like, I want 10 Book of Souls songs. And right. That's like what they did. And it was a little Book of Souls heavy for me. So this next tour, you know, was more of the classics and more of the songs I really wanted to see.
And you and your wife took your son.
Yes.
Which is fucking amazing.
And then we came away, and that night he said, Dad, Iron Maiden's my favorite band. And I was like,
fuck, yes.
Job done.
And by the way, there were a bunch of...
My kid wasn't the only kid there.
Not at all.
No, not by a lot. Yeah, yeah.
He's
maybe one of the littlest I saw because he still has to wear headphones because it gets so loud. So right. He goes into concerts with headphones on. And because I saw teen kids with their dads, and that was always the thing. Like, you know, I didn't want to force my kid to like this music, but I love going to shows and seeing guys with their kids. And I was always like, oh, that'll be great when I can finally bring my kid.
Yeah. Can I give you an emotional story on this point? Every time Maiden tours, I go to see Maiden with my best friends from college, Brent Olson, Bill Catlin, Jeff Benaroff. We pick a different city to go see Maiden in. And this year we picked Portland because our friend Jeff lives in Portland. We've seen them in D.C. We've seen them at Madison Square Garden. I've seen them in Denver, Albuquerque, Chicago. It's just fun to go to a different city. So we're walking into the Portland Theater, and we run into two guys our age, roughly, and a teenage guy. And my friend Jeff knew the two fathers, or the two guys, kind of knew the teen. They were like school, they live in the neighborhood, whatever. And we just said, hey, have a fun show, nice meeting you, blah, 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 blah. And one of the older guys said, hey, this is Billy's first show or whatever. And okay, cool. They walk away, and I said, who was that? Was that the guy's son? My friend Jeff said, no, Billy's dad just died. And he was a huge Maiden fan. So the best friends decided to take the son to a Maiden show. Because the dad was going to do it. And it was like, we had a solemn moment. But at the same time, but awesome.
Yeah, it's a sweet moment.
I mean, I sort of botched the story a little bit, but it was like, and the kid was, he was happy, and he was like happy to be there. And they were like, and it was, I was like, oh, that's why we fucking love this band so much.
Huge part of it.
Fucking Maiden. When was the first time you saw Maiden?
I didn't see them till Peace of Mind tour.
Okay.
I feel like that first tour, I don't know where they played it in California. They probably played the Cow Palace, but I didn't see them Number of the Beast.
So you grew up in the Bay Area.
Yeah. And I was in, so I'm in, like, I got into them when Killers came out. And then I went back and bought the first record right away.
Right.
And I was like, these guys are fucking amazing. And I love Paul Di'Anno. And Paul Di'Anno's my favorite singer. And blah, blah, blah. And then Paul Di'Anno left. And I was like, God damn it. You know, I really like this band. And then this new singer. And they just got a million times better. Like, I love those first two records.
Yeah.
But then my sweet spot is the next three, the first three Bruce Dickinson records. I think those are three of the best records in heavy metal. Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, and Power Slave. Start to finish, perfect record.
And by the way, a quick tangent for Maiden nerds out there. Brian and I could recite the entire history of Iron Maiden to you. We're not going to do a super deep dive into this, but I'm going to read you chunks from Wikipedia so you can know that after playing in clubs around Great Britain for a number of years with vocalist Paul Di'Anno, Maiden released their self-titled album in 1980. It was their first record, which debuted at number 4 in the UK. The album includes early favorites like Running Free, Transylvania, Phantom of the Opera, and Sanctuary. In 81, Maiden released their second studio record, Killers. Rothschild is on Killers, and that record was followed by the band's first world tour, which included their debut performance, opening up for Judas Priest in Las Vegas at the Aladdin Casino. Okay, so back to you. You discovered Maiden around the
81, 82.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Were you already into metal at that point?
Yeah, and I was just looking for whatever, heavier and faster. And what? I was more into hard rock because officially at that point I did like Priest. So yeah, I was a budding metalhead.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like they cemented it for me.
Who was
like
your first metal band?
Well, it would probably be Priest, but, because I don't know. It's
but did
still
you
weird.
Get your
like,
training
people,
in Kiss?
Yeah. Or did so you... I went, so I did Kiss and then it was AC/DC, yeah. Zeppelin, UFO. UFO was a big one.
Right.
Scorps and Priest and then Maiden. And then, but Maiden is, I feel, when I was like, oh, this is what I am. Like, I'm this guy. I'm a guy that right. listens to this stuff all the time.
Did you go so far as to buy the studs, the leather studs, to put on your wrist?
My mom didn't let me do a lot of that stuff. And we didn't have a ton of money. So, but like I started to grow my hair and yeah. I asked for a perm in 84 so I could
a metal perm
so I could make my hair look cooler. I thought if I had a little more body to it or something, because I had straight bowl haircuts before that.
Where did you go to high school?
Sonoma High.
Oh, and, you grew up in,
yeah, in
Sonoma
County. Yeah, right in the wine country town.
Right.
And super touristy.
Give me a portrait of Sonoma in the late 70s, early 80s. What was that all about? Because it wasn't super wine country back
no,
then, was it?
It was mixed. There were some wealthy kids, but then there was also a lot of us. Our parents worked for the state. My mom worked for the state. There was a developmental center there, state hospital for developmentally disabled kids. And that's where my mom moved there in 75 and brought me.
Holy shit.
From San Jose.
Wow.
And then in the 70s and 80s, like, it started to become this touristy town, but they always like kept their like mission town, where it's a California mission town. So a lot of the structures and buildings, they wanted it to look like that, so they wouldn't like take chain restaurants till in the mid 80s.
Till Guy Fieri came along.
Well, yeah. But so when I was in high school, we didn't have McDonald's. We didn't have Taco Bell or any of that shit. You had to go to Napa and other little towns because our town was too kind of quaint for it.
Wow.
But now they have everything, you know. But
it was such a tourist destination now with the wine. I mean,
and
all the wineries
were
boring.
Like you were. You know, you're 45 minutes away from San Francisco, but it felt like you were a million miles away from it.
Of course.
Once we got licenses and started going to shows, Cow Palace became our big go-to for all the bands. And that's like the first place I saw Maiden. I saw Rush there. I saw Van Halen there. And
what was your first show at the Cow Palace?
That I wouldn't even know. I would guess
Ted Nugent.
No, it'd probably be 83 or 84, and it was either Diver Down tour,
or
it would have been the 1980. I know I saw 84 tour there, but I think I saw them first on Diver Down.
Amazing, because I've had Dave Anthony on the show, and he has said that the Cow Palace was the place to go metal shows back
then. Yeah, and I remember just getting hammered in the parking lot, and it just being a big thing. Like, you drive down to the city, from Sonoma, we'd have a pony keg in my back of my friend's truck with a little camper shell.
Fuck yeah.
And we're pissing out the side of the truck as we're driving down.
So you would have to get an older brother, or you would have to drive down to Sonoma.
My first concert was my mom's friend's daughter took me to see the Tubes and Y&T at the Petaluma Fairgrounds.
And Y&T is amazing.
Yeah, Y&T.
Wow.
They're
from the Bay Area.
They had just gone from Yesterday and Today to Y&T, and it was Earthshaker. It was that Earthshaker tour. And they blew the Tubes away.
Wow.
And I went to see Y&T because I was already a fan. And
she's got a man streak.
Oh yeah. But even Earthshaker, that record, so sick.
The Petaluma County Fairgrounds?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because Petaluma is basically the next
door.
town next door.
Right over the hill.
Right. Karen Kilgariff is.
Absolutely.
Karen Kilgariff is from
Petaluma. Our old friend, our old pal.
Wow. Amazing.
I met her around that. Well, after high school. Right after high school we met.
Oh, really?
When we both started doing comedy.
Well, we'll get to that. Yeah. We're going to get to that, but I'm going to give you a little taste of this.
And this is when it all changed.
This is when it all changed. This is when a very young Brendan Smith was like, what the fuck is this?
I couldn't even believe how much better they were.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Run to the Hills, of course, Aunt Jean. By the end of 1981, lead singer Paul Di'Anno was sliding down a very dark rabbit hole due to drugs. With his performances kind of fucked up, Di'Anno was immediately dismissed following the Killer World Tour. Enter Samson frontman Bruce motherfucking Dickinson.
And it's so amazing. Like, shit could have been over for them.
Yep.
And then they got this guy.
Nope. It doesn't happen for most bands, but it happened for Maiden. Because after a quick audition, Dickinson went on the road with Maiden for a small little tour in Italy and then did a very legendary one-off show at the Rainbow in London. That's Pro Shot. It's on fucking YouTube. The band hit the studio, and in March of 1982, they released their third studio record, The Number of the Beast.
And then, like, no disrespect to Dio or Halford at all. But this guy blows everybody's balls off. Like, this guy wins. This guy wins forever. He's the best metal vocalist, in my opinion,
would say,
of all time.
There's Freddie Mercury, and then there's Bruce Dickinson.
Well, Freddie Mercury isn't a metal vocalist.
No, I know. I'm telling you for, like, rock vocalists. Rock.
I'm with you.
One and two.
I got to get Getty in there, though. My boy with the sweet... What would you even call Getty style voice?
I would call it Getty style. I would just call it Getty style. Number of the Beast gave the band their first number one record in London. London is not the UK. And it was just massive. It's loaded with Maiden classics like Hallowed Be Thy Name and Run to the Hills, Number of the Beast, yada, yada. The band hit the road for a giant tour, and that was called the Beast on the Road Tour. But you did not see that tour.
Nope.
Right, neither did I, because they didn't come to Albuquerque on that tour.
I think they did play the city, but I missed them. And it was this weird stage, being 16, you know, and it really depended on could I get somebody, could it all line up?
Could you get someone's older brother to drive into the city?
Can I get my mom to approve it? Can I also scrape together the 20, 30 bucks, whatever? By senior year... I was going to every show because I saw the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes.
And I Mike DeMone'd the fuck out of all my fellow students.
You pulled a Mike DeMone.
I scalped.
You were a little scalper.
Yes.
Okay, so you
We didn't have a Ticketmaster in Sonoma at that time, so I would have my mom take me to Santa Rosa. I'd go to Ticketmaster. Or Bass tickets at that time, I think. It was Bass.
Right.
And I'd just go to a Bass outlet, and I would buy tickets for shows. I'd save up my money, and then I'd go, and I'd resell them for a lot more
fuck
to kids.
And go for free.
And then I would go to the show for free, and then I would also pay for the booze and gas for whoever was driving me, because I would go, hey, dude, I got us tickets.
Wow.
I also got, you know, extra money, and let's get a pony keg.
Wow.
Scalped the shit out. I sold Alabama tickets I didn't go to.
Alabama? The country band Alabama? Yeah.
Who in the Clash? This is one of my biggest regrets. I had Who in the Clash tickets.
At Candlestick.
And I didn't fucking go. I sold them instead.
No. Wow.
I didn't keep a set for myself because I was like, the Clash aren't as cool as Dead Kennedys. And now it's like...
Oh, my God.
And now it's like, it's one of my biggest regrets.
That was at Candlestick, probably.
And I could have seen... I saw the Who later.
Of course.
But I missed the Clash.
I just saw the Who at the Hollywood Bowl.
I kick myself in the ass all the time going that, you know, because, well, I said earlier, I didn't love the Clash in high school.
Right, but just now you understand
that's
the
one
power.
Of those ones that, but I did get to go to Maiden.
Wow.
Van Halen, Rush, Judas Priest.
Wow.
I think Great White opened for Judas Priest that tour up in Sacto. We went to
Sacto
Cal Expo. I would see a lot of shows at Cal Expo, and then later Oh, I saw Maiden at a Cal Expo.
What's Cal Expo?
Cal Expo is the state fair up in Sacramento.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, so right, there's so a they lot had, of outdoor. Like,
the rodeo arena or whatever. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I've said this on this podcast many times, for me, Albuquerque, New Mexico, every single heavy metal show in the 80s happened at Tingley Coliseum in the dead center of Albuquerque on the state fairgrounds. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, literally
was
on
it
Route
outdoors
60. No, it was indoor. It was a rodeo arena.
Right, okay.
Like a 10,000 seat rodeo
that's
arena.
That's what Cow Palace felt like. Cow Palace was this, I think that's what they used to, that's why it's called that. I think they used to have rodeos and well, that kind of animal shows.
I believe
shows
Dave
or
Anthony yeah. said when they built it, it was like, you know, not 4-H, but it was like bring the fucking cows in and buy them.
Basically,
auction yeah. Cow Palace.
Cows. Yeah.
Auction the fucking cows off.
It was historically bad sound, too. Is that true?
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. I have good memories of it. Yeah, yeah. I know people, sound nerds, yeah, talk about it, but no. Not when you're seeing Van Halen 84, yeah. Not when you're seeing Maiden. No, great. No way.
And the Bay Area fucking loves metal. That's yeah. The other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. What were some of your favorite shows? If you can just give me a sprinkle in your mind, like what, these were very mind? Important
well,
shows.
Power Slave Tour. Power Slave Tour for Maiden,
which we'll talk about
which
in a
I saw twice. I saw at the beginning of that tour and at the end of that tour, and I think I saw them at both places. I saw that I just mentioned. I think I saw them Cow Palace and I think Cal Expo, if okay. I'm correct. It's all a blur, but yeah. I would just go, you know. Right. I went to as many shows as I could right. back then. Once I got the approval, and then once I started driving, it was all over.
Wow.
Like, you know. We'd go to SACTO to shows. Or
16? Is that the license in California?
For me, yeah. And driving what? My mom's Pontiac Sunbird.
Give me another big show that was like, oh, fuck, this is historic.
But it doesn't have to be metal? Or it
doesn't have to be anything. Could be Pat Benatar. I don't care.
No, one of my...
Go-Go's.
Oh, man, there's so many. So... Metallica, Day in the Green.
Like early Metallica?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, with Cliff.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
And then... one of my all-time favorite shows is still Bad Brains at Rock. It wasn't the Rock on Broadway. It was across the Stone.
Fantastic.
The Stone was like one of our famous places in the city, and it was right on the main street there, right on Broadway. And down the corner is like Battery, where Metallica wrote that song Battery. It's about hanging out in that hood. And so that night, we were pre-showing before... before Bad Brains and this band Leeway, it must have been 87, 88.
Had you just moved into the city?
No, I was still living in SACTO, okay. But we drove down, me and my buddy who worked at Tower Records. I was big, by that point, I had the sweet job in SACTO. When I first started comedy, I was working at a skateboard shop, a pizza place, and a record store.
Fuck like, it. Wait, all, did you work at Tower Records in Sacramento?
Yeah.
Holy shit. What was the name of the skate shop?
Sacramento Surf and Skate. We sold a lot of like Bad Boy Club stickers and, you know, that 80s shit. And Oakley.
Powell Peralta t-shirts.
To the cool kids. The douchebags were buying all the Oakley shit and all the, you know, because we sold to both. We had the cool skate kids coming in and buying, you know, bubblegum surf wax and then, you know, skating the curbs out in front of our store. But then the douchebags would come in to buy these Bad Boy Club shit for their Volkswagens that they had surf racks on that lived 2 hours away from the ocean. And
right.
Just poser town. But
and the sex we would wax sell them. T-shirts.
Yeah, we would sell them shit. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then the sunglasses, yes. Which was...
just douchebaggery.
Oakley Blades.
I think Sacramento invented douchebags. Some of these clowns I remember back then.
SACTO. I don't think I've ever heard...
I moved to SACTO and the mid 80s, right out of high school.
Right.
Well, I first moved to Phoenix because a friend of mine was going to air conditioning school out in Phoenix.
As you do.
Yeah. And he was learning to fix air conditioners, him and his brother. And I went out and lived with them. And we lived in Phoenix. I lived in Phoenix 6 months. And I worked at a car dealership. And I was miserable.
Wait.
I was a lot boy at a car dealership in Phoenix, Arizona.
A lot boy?
I drove IROCs around. Like, they'd go, hey, go get an IROC and bring it to the front. And I'd go grab an IROC.
Oh, that was your job. If someone was going on a test drive and they wanted to drive the IROC.
Or if you had to, you know, clean it up and get it ready to sell it. I would be the guy that would go find it from the other lot, and we had an annex, and we had all this other stuff. And
what was the driving, name? What was the name of that?
Vets around, and then I got restricted. I couldn't drive Vets anymore because I got really squirrely in a brand new vet.
Because they did.
It had like 4 miles on it, and I had done like a bunch of Batman turns in the back, just pulling the emergency brake. And
yeah, bro, you cannot. I mean, the chances of you fucking up that Vets are high. What was the name of that dealership?
When you're 17 or 18, you kind of don't give a shit,
right?
Lou Grubb Chevrolet.
Lou Grubb. Hey, where? Where's everybody going? Lou Grubb Chevrolet.
Right in Phoenix.
Wow.
And then I went to, I got to see Crew.
In Phoenix.
Oh, Phoenix Loudness, is a metal town.
Loudness, Rat. I think Loudness opened for Rat. I remember being in a rented limo. It's my first time ever being in a limo. And we're doing CR off a Rat CD case. Little crank, little crystal meth.
Sure. As you do.
And I hear Rat start. Oh, no, I hear Loudness start. And I'm like, you guys, Loudness is going. We got to go.
Rock and roll crazy nights.
But also, let me get this bump up in here before we go enjoy some Loudness and Rat.
We're coming back to Maiden. This is Flight of Icarus, Aunt Jean. In December of 1982, drummer Clive Burr was fired from Maiden and replaced by Nico McBrain, who I know Brian loves as much as me.
Yeah.
One of the best dudes in rock and roll.
And they got even better.
Soon afterwards, the band flew to the Bahamas to record their next record. May 1983, they released their fourth studio album, Peace of Mind. Oh, massive, brilliant. massive. Brilliant. Really, it reached number 3 in the UK. The album includes The Trooper, which you heard at the top of the show, Flight of Icarus. And soon after, they just hit the road for a massive, massive tour. After that big tour, they released, and by the way, that's what the first Maiden show I saw in Albuquerque was the Peace of Mind tour, with Saxon opening for the band.
I still have my tour book.
Then they released Power Slave in 1984. Power Slave, another massive record, includes the singles 2 Minutes to Midnight, Aces High, and Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. They toured after that. That was the big, monstrous World Slavery tour, the band's largest to date. Consisted of 193 shows in 28 countries over 13 months, playing to an estimated 3,500,000 people. This tour cemented Maiden as a monster touring rock band. Maiden history. A little Maiden history. So, when do you move into San Francisco? When do you go, okay, it's time to...
First I fuck up. First I go to San Francisco. First I go to L.A. I came to L.A. I've been here twice.
To do the comedy.
Yes. My first time did not turn out well.
Okay.
My first time I moved down to Long Beach in 1990 from Sacramento. Or 1989. And then went back with my tail between my legs in 1990. I broke my back jumping off a lifeguard tower with some jackass friends of mine down in Long Beach.
And
then I walked back to my apartment.
So much to unpack.
I walked back to my apartment with a broken third vertebrae.
No shit. Do you have hardware?
What?
Do you have hardware?
No. I completely healed myself. I got into a tub of water because I was like, what would my mom do when I'm
wasted?
You went
to Dr. Brando, the doctor. 14 in my
hour mom. Wasted. I'd been drinking for 14 hours, right. And then also weed and some little crystal meth.
Sure.
It's kind of a running thing. Yeah,
sure.
Oh, man. That was before we knew how fucked up meth was. Like,
yeah. But you came down to Southern California to do comedy?
Yeah, yep.
And had then, you been doing comedy in the Bay Area?
No, just in SAC at that point.
Okay.
And I'd done maybe a couple of shows in SF. But why I didn't move to SF first, I don't know. I just thought I was ready. And I was like, look over your shoulder, Pauly Shore. Here I come. Here comes the NorCal, you know, the NorCal version of you.
Oh,
and I was more metal than him, and
oh,
you know,
1,000%.
I wasn't gonna
he was doing a character.
Juice. Yeah, yeah, but I had hair down past my tits.
Wow,
was straight, like beautiful. Margaret Cho, when I first met her, said that Tom Rhodes, the comedian, he had long hair at the time.
It was amazing.
That, he washed his hair with a bar of soap or bar of ivory and a rock, and then that Angels washed my hair with Evian.
That's what Margaret Cho said to you.
Margaret said that about my hair. My hair was beautiful.
You had beautiful hair at the end of the '80s.
Yeah, and then the mid early '90s, I started to lose it, and then I moved to LA, and my girlfriend at the time was like, "You should shave that." But so '90, wow. I broke my back, went back to Sonoma and lived with my mom a third time.
Wow. Okay.
Because there was another time where, well, when I went to Phoenix and then I went to SAC after Phoenix, went first back to Sonoma, then the SAC, started comedy 87.
What's the comedy scene in SAC?
It was small, but there's still clubs there, you okay. know. And then but that's where I got my, you know, figured it out and figured it that this was something I wanted to do, and then went to LA with these big ambitions, and then went back and then lived with my mom, and then moved to San Francisco, and that's where I met Patton and my roommate.
You fell in with the comedy crowd in San Francisco, yeah. Which, for people who don't know, in the late 80s, early 90s, had
huge,
some
yeah.
heavy fucking people.
Well, there Janine was all these guys before us, but then there was us. Yeah, so right. Janine wasn't officially in San Francisco, but we
was Greg Barron there?
Yeah, so it was me, Greg, Margaret Cho, Blaine Kapach, Patton Oswalt, a bunch of other comics.
That's a very heavy group of people.
Wasn't Bobcat up there at that point?
Yeah, he was, but he was right before us.
Right.
And then, so the guys before us, there was a guy, Warren Thomas, who passed away, but Warren Thomas was a big deal. Greg Proops.
Right.
Jeff Bolt. Bobcat Goldthwait. I'm trying to think of some of the female comics. Sue. Oh, God, what was her name? Oh, fuck. I can't pull her name out of my ass, but there was just great, 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 great comics.
And were you guys sort of doing a version of alt comedy? Like, not
we were just
doing
kind of being
the
ourselves.
Joke set of joke?
We were doing kind of brick wall comedy. It wasn't really alternative yet, but till I saw Janine, like, Janine was already doing her thing, and then David Cross came to town, and he and I met in SF, and then so when I moved to LA, one of my first jobs was working for him right after I worked for MTV first, and then
we
started
Show.
Mr. Show,
yeah. Right, which is, I mean, for you, that getting on Mr. Show was,
it's still the biggest deal for me. Yeah,
it's still the biggest deal for you,
because through that I mean, I got every other sitcom, or, you know, sitcom writers are like watching Mr. Show.
So they
put me on all these shows because people saw us on.
For people who don't know, Mr. Show was a groundbreaking comedy show. Odenkirk, Brian Posehn, David Cross,
Paul F. Tompkins, Jay Johnston, Sarah Silverman was all over it.
Heavy people doing this groundbreaking comedy show that all the top comedy people watched.
Yep.
Meanwhile,
and it was already like. And it was the cool ticket in L.A. Like, Seth Green was in our audiences, Alyssa Milano, like all these, you know,
young kids,
actors and comedians that were, this was the thing to go see. So they were all at our shows. It was crazy.
I remember the cover of the L.A. Weekly. It was Bob and Dave in a, sort of a running position.
Yes.
And the article was, this is the coolest fucking thing that's ever been created.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, one of the great skits that Brian ever did was the burned boy. What was the title of that skit?
Titanica.
Yeah, Titanica.
Clearly.
Where the band Titanica comes to.
I don't know where that came from.
Just an incredible skit. Look it up on YouTube. Oh, we're hearing Wasted Years right now. This is returning from a massive world tour. I've skipped over so much fucking Maiden shit, but I'm just going to say, in 1986, Maiden adopted a different style for their record, Somewhere in Time. For the first time in the band's history, we heard synthesized bass and guitars. like you're kind of hearing on this song.
It's still so good, though.
It's so fucking amazing. Wasted Years.
Yeah.
This became a staple of their live shows. The experimentation continued on their next record, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, which was released in April of 1988. A concept record, Seventh Son, was based on the 1987 novel, Seventh Son, by Orson Scott Card. That was a fantasy novel about a young man with mystical abilities. It would also be the band's first record to include keyboards. Just another giant tour ensued. Did you like Seventh Son of a Seventh Son? Because they went
that's kind of where I was tapping out.
Right.
But also because metal was getting so much heavier and I was getting more into thrash. I was already into thrash. And then, so it kind of made me leave bands like Priest and Maiden. But I mean, yes. I still always loved Maiden, but I just didn't listen to those records. The one after it, not so much either.
Right.
But
it's get
the, now, these though, big, I love Seventh Son. Right. But at the time, I was like, what are you guys doing?
You and I are similar in that we want the new. We want the edge. And by this point in 1988, Maiden is getting a little bloated, a little big. The synthesizer, it's weird. And then we're looking for...
there's all these other shit. So there's thrash metal, but then there's also like
Pixies.
Faith No More is starting.
Right.
Red Hot Chili Peppers weren't dumb yet.
Right. For me, it was Replacements and Husker Du.
Yeah, I liked all that
Sonic
stuff, too.
Youth.
Yeah.
That's where I gravitated to.
I liked girls that looked like Kim Deal, and so I started...
I stood on Kim Deal's side of the stage for that exact reason.
Yeah. Oh, so
I think
was
the fantasy of like dating a bass player girl, like for me, started in the late 80s.
And that's like when my brain was opening up a little more too. Like once I started working at Tower and met like kids that were a lot cooler than me and their minds were a lot more open than I was. Yeah. I was just the metalhead kid. And so then, you know, that's when I met the Rasta kid and that's, you know, and the kid that worked in classical and the girls that were into Brian Ferry and, you know, my mind opened up a little bit in the late 80s.
I just spilled,
that's all right.
I just spilled $200 worth of whiskey that Richard is kindly, that's about $17 worth of whiskey. I worked at Tower Westwood.
Oh, shit.
When I first moved to Los Angeles.
I don't think I knew that we both did the yellow and red.
And I, in October of 1990, because I moved out to LA right after college, I got a job at Tower Westwood. I walked into Tower to buy the new Soul Asylum record. I had a Soul Asylum t-shirt on, and the girl behind the counter was a fan, and I literally said, hey, are you guys taking applications? And she like hooked me up on the spot, and like the next day I'm working at Tower Westwood.
That's awesome. That was a cool store. I remember that store.
It was a great store.
Yeah.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar used to come in there all the time because they had a great jazz section. I will also say, because I worked at Tower Westwood, they would send some of us to Tower Sunset all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had.
Didn't Grohl work at that shop? I think Dave Grohl worked at that shop.
I feel like
did
he really?
Did. Yeah, that shop was killer too. Like when I
made Tower Sunset.
Yeah, when I made LA trips and I went there.
That was pretty intense. I stole the Led Zeppelin box set from Tower Sunset when came out. Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh good.
Well,
yeah.
Because the move was
steal records from a record store unless you work there.
Well, here was the Tower move at Westwood and Sunset. If you remember in 1990 when CDs came out in the big giant cardboard case.
Oh, I remember it well.
We were supposed to say to people, would you like to recycle this box?
Yeah.
And all the time they would say yes. So you'd cut it open and just hand them the CD. So what we would do on our time off is that I just knocked over another beer. Jesus, I'm a mess. we would just walk around the store, take what you like, go back behind the counter, cut the box open, and put the CD in a little bag. And at the end of the night, take that bag and you're gone, because the magnetic strip for the security was on the box,
yeah,
not on the CD.
Yep.
And that's how I got the Led Zeppelin box set that came out at the end of 1990. And the security guy said to me, if you're taking one, take one for me.
Nice. We, the security never gave us any shit. Everybody was doing it.
Right.
And people would just take, we would put things in garbage. And then just take out the garbage and then go out to the garbage with your car at the end of the night.
Okay.
And take your shit out of the garbage.
The dudes at Tower Westwood, the guys in receiving, because the receiving in Tower Westwood was on the second floor, they would throw boxes of CDs into the dumpster.
Yeah, that's exactly what we
did. And then they, at the end of the night, they would come back and they would take those boxes.
It's funny how all criminals think the same, despite the region.
Well, and so there's a Tower documentary, and I...
Colin Hanks.
Yeah, and part of the downfall of Tower is definitely theft.
Oh yeah. Well, our manager...
Employee theft, and it was everywhere.
Our manager... Everybody,
I don't think I knew anybody that wasn't stealing from the store.
But you weren't making ironic, enough money.
Which is ironic, because the downfall of the record industry was theft.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, but here's the thing. That our manager at Tower Westwood was super, a super amazing lady, and she basically said, "Don't steal me blind."
Right.
Like she just say, "Hey, just I know blind. You're gonna take. Don't steal me blind."
It's like a bar,
right? And then I will say this: you will love this little detail. Tower Sunset. There used to be a UCD store right next to the whiskey on Sunset.
Okay.
In 90, 91, maybe it lasted to 92, and all of their CDs came from Tower employees who. You know, would show up with all the new stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, those were $5, $6, $7 a pop if you had new stuff. And so that's how they supplemented their income, by selling those CDs to UCD stores.
I feel shitty about it, but also...
You got to do it.
It's how my CD collection started. I think I had 20 CDs before I bought a CD player. Right. And it was when I was first started working at Tower, and I you know, ripped off all these long boxes and bought records that I was like, well, I got to have 2112. I got to have this. I got to have this, you know. And so my first CDs were like pretty much Maiden, Rush, Metallica, all that, all my favorite shit.
Absolutely.
And then whatever records came out after that, I just started taking them.
My morality around taking the CDs was, I will pay for what I want to support, and I will steal.
Oh, I did both. I didn't steal everything. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I did the same thing.
I'll steal Empire by Queensryche, because I don't know how I feel about Queensryche right now.
Oh.
We could just do a podcast where Brian and I just listen to Maiden and we cry. You see us on camera, just like.
Oh, nice.
You're just hearing Brazilians. This is Fear of the Dark. This is the sound of 250,000 Brazilians singing along to Iron Maiden.
They sing the guitar parts.
Yeah. Singing the guitar parts. People need to understand how big Iron Maiden is in South America, especially in Central America. Our Latino brothers, our Brazilian brothers, our Argentinian and Chilean brothers.
Absolutely.
Fucking love Maiden.
But they're big around the world. I mean, they're big in India, and they're big in fucking
and
Tokyo
Asia.
And
Sweden and
everywhere.
But nowhere bigger
than South America.
Yeah, as they say, when you go south of the border, it gets a little hotter. Sometimes feel a little strange, a little anxious when it's dark.
Fear of the dark. Fear of the dark. Didn't love this song when it came out. Now I love
it. No, now it's like I get goosebumps when I hear it. Like when the first version of it was kind of lame.
They haven't written a shitty song, really, I don't think. Yeah. They don't have a turbo lover.
Oh, we're off the rails. Iron Maiden regrouped in 1990 to work on a new studio record. During pre-production, Adrian Smith left the band due to differences with Steve Harris. And he was replaced by Yannick Garros, who we talked about before. It was on the Bruce Dickinson's third wheel. No Prayer for the Dying was released in 1990, and that was soon followed by 1992's Fear the Dark. In 1993, Bruce Dickinson left the band to pursue a solo career, and he was replaced for the remainder of the 1990s by vocalist Blaze Bailey. Did you go to any Blaze Bailey shows? No.
No.
Yeah, neither did I. It was weird. There was a cover band. It was. They were kind of a Maiden cover band in a way. Even though the band itself was amazing.
I may have, but
I didn't.
I think I blocked it out.
I remember them playing at the Palace on Vine, and I was like, should I go? But I don't want to go see listen to Blaze Bailey. Okay, let me just wrap up Maiden shit. I've skipped so much fucking Maiden talk. It doesn't matter. I want to say this. Blaze Bailey was let go in January of 1990, and the band immediately got on the phone and begged Bruce Dickinson to come back to the band. He agreed, and so did Adrian Smith. With Gare's remaining Maiden solidified the three guitar lineup, and they embarked on a hugely successful reunion tour. That tour consisted of over 100 dates and culminated in this show, January 2001, at the Rock and Rio Festival, where they played
that
to an
tour
audience.
I did see.
Yeah, I saw that at Universal Amphitheater.
Yeah.
And they were back, and the rest is Maiden history because they have not split up. They're still
going strong. And I think I've seen every tour since then.
I have not missed any Maiden tour since Bruce came back to the band. Every time, and again, in starting at this point, that's where me and my friends decided we're going to like vacation together. We're going to pick a different city every time they tour. And I will say this to people listening at home. It is one of the funnest concerts you could possibly go to because it's life affirming. The band has a goddamn good time playing, which is why I love them
absolutely
so much. I'm wearing an Iron Maiden shirt from this tour just for Brian. Well, dude, you and I have been partying for 3 hours.
Holy shit.
We've been partying for 3 hours.
Some food.
Yeah. And I have to
I gotta
get ready
Uber
for my date tomorrow.
Damn it.
Yeah. But I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart
Thanks, buddy, so much
for coming in. I hope you had a good time.
I did. I've been wanting to do this since you started. Like,
I'm just
a fan of yours too. So I was happy to be here.
Major fan of yours, and I'm just thrilled. And it's super fun. And again, Richard, thank you, man, for driving in from the hills of Woodland to be here and produce this Rock Tales with Ahmed Zappa and Brendan Smith and Richard Sheltenga. Sirius Channel 106. It's out there.
Do you know what channel it's on?
No. 106, did I just say
106?
What channel are you on?
Volume. Is it called Is it the Boneyard?
Volume.
Yes. Boneyard.
It's not the Boneyard.
Is it?
It's not Rock Radio either.
No. Deep Tracks.
Is it Deep Tracks?
No,
are we on Deep Tracks?
Rush took over Deep Tracks for a couple of weeks and now they're gone.
Really?
I wish Rush would just have a serious channel.
They should.
All the time.
And by the way, RIP Neil Peart for Brian and I, a big one.
Yeah.
So, Richard, do you have something fun to play us out with?
Should we come back and talk about Rush at some point?
I would absolutely come by.
Yeah. Well, I'll save that for Brian for another time. We'll come back and we'll talk about Rush.
To do that.
Do you have something fun to play us out with?
There we go.
I left alone.
This is the
my mind was blank.
The blood that flows through my veins.
My tattoo.
He's got a 666 on his fucking middle finger.
Kat Von D played this song while she gave me this tattoo.
Okay. Time out. Time out. Weave it back a little bit. He just said the words Kat Von D.
My only tattoo is a Kat Von D tattoo because we were hammered at the Van Halen reunion. And you don't know this story?
No.
It's okay. No. We're ended on this story.
All right, we'll end it on this story.
So,
holy shit.
So Scott Ian calls me and goes, Kirk Hammett got his hookup for the Van Halen show. Do you want to go in the Metallica van? We're going to go with Metallica guys.
Oh, and something just fell on my foot.
No, I know. I'm name dropping. I'm doing some serious name dropping. But so it's all part of the story. It all ties in. So I go with my tattooed heavy metal friends, my buddy who's up for a Grammy tonight, Mark Asagueda from Death Angel, mm-hmm. joins us.
Mm-hmm.
And so me and Mark and Scott and Kirk and a couple other friends, we cruise in. We've got Metallica security with us, takes us right to the sound, you know, right where the sound is at the Forum. And there's only 200 people in the Forum. It's a friend show. And so Van Halen has just invited friends and family, and we're part of that. And we just watched the entire set from the middle of the room. And I'm sitting there with Kirk, with Mark, who, you know, Death Angel is also one of my favorite bands. And I'm just nerding out. Show ends. they go, "You want to go back and meet Dave?" And I'm like, oh, fuck. So we go back. We meet Dave. Dave's like, "Hey, man." He sees me and he goes, "I know you." And I'm like, "No fucking way do you." And he's like, "Sarah Silverman program. She's a funny bitch." And I was like, "Okay."
Well.
But cool. Yeah, but yeah. So then he goes, "Hold on. Wolfgang's here. We got to wait for Wolfie to leave because Wolfie's playing bass. Wolfie has to leave the building." And then
before the coke can come out?
No, not coke. But as soon as Wolfie leaves, then the jack came out. So, like, Dave looked at the security guards like, "Is Wolfie gone?" He's like, "Yes." Then a couple bottles of Jack came out. Then the weed came out. So now I get high and drink Jack Daniels with these heroes of mine. And then we leave and we're wasted. And then so then we go to the Rainbow and we're at the Rainbow and we close the Rainbow. And now it's 3 a.m. and Kirk goes, "We should all get 666 tattoos." And I'm like, "Yeah.
Yes, we should."
He got like a, he doesn't have a tramp stamp. His is on his ass, I think.
The same tattoo that you have on your middle finger.
Yeah, and it's the Omen. Oh, Omen style 666. God. And Scott got his on his finger just like me. Scott's wife got hers behind the ear. Mark Asaguirre, I think, got a tramp stamp. and we all got them, and we call Kat Von D at 3:30. They're like, "Where can we get tattoos at 3:30 in the morning?" Yeah, yes. And so she's at her studio, a little hammered, and so we show up at the studio
on
now.
Fountain in the Brea.
Yeah, now it's 3:34 in the morning. We get there, and we all got tattoos. And she goes, "Do you want to hear the song?" And she put Number of the Beast on for my. As I got my tattoo.
Jesus fucking Christ.
And I don't really need another tattoo with that one.
You know, that's one of the best stories I've ever heard in my life. I don't think there's another way to end the BrandoCast.
Well, the best is, so I get home.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife is like, "Why the fuck are you home at 6 a.m? What happened?
I'm not home at 6 a.m. I'm at home at 6 in the morning.
I wish. No, but this is what happened. She goes... I go, "Honey, I fucked up." And she goes, "What did you do?" You know, she's like, you know, 6 a.m, you're coming home from a metal show. What, you know, she thought I fucked strippers or whatever.
Right.
And she's awake for a second.
Or made out with David Lee Roth.
Yeah. She goes, "What did you do?" And I go, I did something dumb. She goes, "What did you do?" And I just held up my finger and she goes, "You idiot." And then she went to sleep. And that's a true story. That's her exact words.